Once upon a time, in the land of plenty, there was a kid named Zed. And Zed lived with his family, and it never seemed like they had enough of anything. Not enough heat to warm the house, not enough food to fill their bellies. Of course, the land of plenty had a help center where families like Zed's could go if they needed help getting through the week. But the thing about the help center was that the Council of Matters Big and Small had decided that the most cost-effective and nutrient-rich way to deal with poverty in the land of plenty was to serve nothing but canned beans, rain or shine. The problem was Zed didn't like beans to begin with, and eating them all the time was almost unbearable. So Zed went to see the Council of Matters Big and Small. The members of the council all sat in big, tall chairs and looked down on Zed as he walked in. The president of the council leaned forward and said, "Yes, what do you want?" Zed pulled himself up tall and said, "Hi, I'm Zed, and I wanted to lodge a complaint that some families have too much and some families have too little. My family gets food from the help center every week, and I'm here because I'm sick of beans. I want lasagna and cooked carrots and chocolate pudding for dessert. Surely all human beings deserve that at the very least." The council members looked surprised and then grumpy. The president of the council said, "Zed, what makes you think you have the right to get more than your fair share?" Zed tried to say, "You see, it doesn't feel like a fair share," but no one could hear him because rather than listening for a response, the president had turned to the other members of the council and they were all muttering quiet and then loud about how rude children could be these days. The president of the council decided to sleep on it before making a decision. Plus, Zed's talk of lasagna and cooked carrots and chocolate pudding had made her hungry, so she went home and ate a big plate of all three. After a comfortable night's sleep, the president decided that even though it was true that Zed deserved more than a can of beans, giving everyone enough to live comfortably just wasn't practical. The brass tacks of it was that the land of plenty didn't have the infrastructure for such a radical change of routine. So instead of addressing Zed's concerns, the president told the Council of Matters Big and Small that Zed's request was too difficult and idealistic and therefore not a priority, and they should move on to something else. And so Zed's family went on getting too little, and other families went on getting too much, and it wasn't fair, and it wasn't right. Whether we're in kindergarten or third grade or adults, we know that this isn't the way the story should end. Zed's story is sad and frustrating. We don't want some people to have too much and some people to have too little. This story reminds us that the world is not as it should be, that there is a strategic imbalance of power, resources, and opportunities in our world, our country, our city. I know that when I run into the difficult truth that I live comfortably in a world of such stark economic disparities, when I run into these difficult truths, I want to turn away. Or I want to believe that it makes the world better, it helps solve the problem, if I simply try to feel as grateful as I can for my abundance. When, of course, the difficult truth is that no matter how grateful I am, my gratitude will not correct the carefully protected imbalance of wealth. My gratitude will not make it okay that I have so much and others have so little. We heard earlier what Pema Chodron had to say about difficult truths. She said, the dig is that we want to get rid of the situations that make us most uncomfortable. We want to solve the problem and not hurt anymore. Pema Chodron goes on to say, difficult feelings provoke all our irritations and bring our habitual patterns to the surface. And this becomes the moment of truth. You have to choose to stay with the rawness and discomfort of the situation and let it transform you. It's a lie to think that if we could just learn to get away from the painful things, then we would be happy. We have to sit with the painful things, the impossible. This impossible can't solve them overnight kind of things until we find our way to meaningful change, until we find a different way of existing together. We'll never get closer to our impossible hopes without this practice of sitting with the rawness and discomfort of injustice. But how do we do both? Hold injustice in our world and our gratitude at the same time? And do we dare give thanks in an unfair world? Do we dare give thanks in an unfair world? Do we dare find delight and joy in a world where there is suffering? Yes, of course. Unitarian Universalist minister Robert Walsh says, life is a gift we have not earned and for which we cannot pay. There is no necessity that there be a universe, no inevitability about a world moving toward life and then self-consciousness. There might have been nothing at all. Gratitude can't take away the suffering of others. Gratitude can't make life fair. But then expressing gratitude does not have to be a hopeless attempt to pay a debt for all that we have. Gratitude can be a thanksgiving, an astonished, joyful response to being alive. I had the same teacher for second and third grade, and her name was Carol. She was everyone's favorite teacher. After recess, Carol would have us sit in a circle, and she'd read aloud while our heart rates calmed enough to focus again on classroom work. If it was your birthday, Carol would tell you all the ways she had seen you learn and grow during this last year of your life, and why the world was a better place with you in it. And you really got the sense that she'd been watching you, that you mattered, that she was grateful for your existence. Carol took the time in the midst of all the demands of the classroom to notice and help us notice what was good and beautiful. As an adult, I kept in touch with Carol. Once when I was visiting home, we went out for dinner. We enjoyed the conversation so much that we made a habit of seeing one another whenever I was in town. And slowly I learned more about Carol's life than I had ever known as a kid. She'd had a difficult first marriage, made worse by living on a shoestring budget. For a time, she'd been a single parent with two young children. She'd been underpaid at hard jobs, being behind a cash register for years before she began teaching. She'd battled cancer. Carol's life had not been an endless stream of blessings. So many things had not gone her way. She knew life was not often fair, and she couldn't help feeling grateful. Her gratitude was a real, no strings attached response to being alive. Gratitude was not a payment for blessings received. It was not about taking an account of the good and the bad in the world and deciding whether or not she should be grateful. She just was. Elizabeth Tarbox writes, "I give thanks for the opportunities to love that present themselves in the turmoil of life, where the light catches the tears in another's eyes, where hands are held and there are moments without words. Let us be present then. Let us stand in the morning on damp grass, hear the syllables of birdsong, and fill up on sweet air that rolls over oceans and continents. Let us look up at the stars and the planets that fill the night sky with majesty. Let us witness the first fresh buds of spring amid the brown sticks of winter. And for all of this, let us be grateful. Let us not defend ourselves against the discomfort of unruly emotion, nor seek to close down our hearts for fear a new love will come to shake our foundations. Let us instead be open to discovering a new way of seeing an old problem, or appreciating the perfection of a seashell, or the possibility of friendship. For in giving ourselves to what we do not yet understand, we receive life's blessing. In a world so unfair, let us sit with the pain of the struggle, trusting that the rawness and discomfort will indeed transform us. And in the midst of it all, dare to give thanks.